Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
Weather today in the greater...
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning and welcome to the live version of the Early Morning Late Show. Just so you know, with a big live studio audience this morning, nothing, just so you know, nothing flashy, nothing gimmicky. Just so you know, I'm not going to do anything out of the ordinary. Sorry. Sorry about that. No eyelashes anymore. But I first want to thank my friend Jameson Statima, who actually came up with the theme song for the Early Morning Late Show. And he is actually, I think, on our studio line right now. Good morning, Jameson.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
I just want to let the audience give you a nice round of applause for the theme song. So let's give it up for Jameson Statima.
Thank you very much.
And now that I have you on the air, would you just kind of do a acapella version of it for us? No pressure.
Early morning, late show. You know, I just rolled out of bed.
I know, and it doesn't. That doesn't sound anything like you, just so you know. But thank you so much
there's
for
doing. There's a magical thing called auto-tune. I just love it.
I love it, and I love you, and thank you so much for helping with the theme song. And go about your day now. Thank you for coming on the show, and thanks again.
Hey, I got to tell your listeners, Bill Arnold is the real deal. He's a great friend, and everything he comes off as on the radio is how he is in real life. So, love you, Bill.
Thanks. Love you, too.
Congratulations.
All right. Let's get the show started with my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines,
morning,
Patrick Albanese. Let's give Patrick a big round of applause.
Do I have to say nice stuff about you?
Yeah, only if you want to.
Why did he kick it off that way?
Well, I don't know. He put a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah. I think Bill's great.
Awkward. We have a great show. Patrick's going to come on. We're going to take just a break in a minute, but Patrick is here, of course. And also, I've got live studio guest George P. Fraser is here from Real Recovery. Dr. Peter Kapsner is with us. And as also my friend and Bible mentor, Jeff Verdorn's going to be with us. And we're going to be talking about the biblical reasons for low taxes and limited government on tax day. Doesn't that sound like an interesting thing to talk about? How many have realized today is tax day? Okay, good. Many of you. And I already want to give out the award of the day for the person who has traveled the furthest to be here. Jim and Tess have driven from South Dakota. They left this morning at about 2 in the morning to get here to be part of the show. Anyway, so we'll take a short break, and when we come back, Patrick Albanese, I've got a lot of questions for you, my friend. It is 7, almost 8 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
And my head, I'd be scratching. And of course, that theme song belongs to Patrick Albanese. He chose it himself. I don't know why you would do that, but I love it.
You said, hey, what do you want for a theme song? And I think I answered within about a second. I said, how about if I only had a brain? And we said, it works.
That works.
It's kind of the same thing with the name of the show. Because you're going, what's a good name for the show? And we had played with a couple
kicked
of ideas.
Around a bunch of stuff.
And you go, what about this?
It works.
Yeah.
We are broadcasting live this morning from the University of Northwestern, the Mel Johnson Media Center. And, of course, that is in Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes and one really nice day. And I'm not sure we've had it yet this year, but I'm looking forward to that.
By the way, on the drive up, I hit 3 of those lakes.
They're called potholes.
Well,
Patrick,
they're pretty big, yeah.
There's one by my house so big it actually has a coffee shop in it. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
They serve a nice latte. So anyway, Patrick, I want to talk this morning to you about there is no coincidences in God's economy.
I was just going to say that.
That's right. We've often talked about how you have opportunities that come about, or chance meetings you have with people, and you think it's no big deal. But in fact, it's a huge deal, because there's nothing inconsequential in God's economy. So tell the audience a little bit of your story about that.
Well, my whole life is a series of flukes. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you say, that's a lot of flukes. But it'll be, you know, very strange things. Like I got stood up for a date once. I had these great tickets to see Les Miserables. Great seats at the Pantages Theater in Hollywood. And I got stood up. So I had to call somebody at the last minute, a friend. Because she was the only person I knew that had nothing going on that could probably get ready in 10 minutes. You know. So we went, and she said, afterwards, I'm going to take you to this restaurant down the street just for a thank you, and you have to pay because I have no money. Anyway, we go there, and we happen to run into a friend of hers who worked there, who had just put his notice in that day. I was looking for a job, and I ended up with that guy's job just because I happened to be there, the very first guy there that showed up when this guy put in a notice. They're going, well, this kind of abbreviates that hiring process. Here's the guy. But that's a simple example. But that ended up turning into a job that got me back into the magic community. And then I started performing again. And then I started working at the Magic Castle. And one day I'm working at the Magic Castle and had some friends that were going to head down to San Diego to see a show. And they said, you should go with us. And I kind of looked at the group of guys going, I was like, really don't like most of you, but... I mean, 2.5 hours in the car, which is normally rough enough and with you guys. But they talked me into it, and I went down to San Diego to see a little show called Triple Espresso, which some of you here in Minneapolis might be familiar with. And I see this, and I'm instantly taken with the show, and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I'm going to do something very uncustomary here. But there's a guy in the show playing the part of a magician, and I'm a magician. I'm just going to ask him if I can have his job. And it happened to be Bill Arnold, who had flown into San Diego, had been there for 2 weeks, and was actually looking for a new person to train for the magician part because they were expanding the show to another city. And he was on a flight the next morning at 7 a.m. I'm there at Sunday night at like 9 p.m. at the end of the show, walking up saying, you ever looking for people? He was flying home less than 12 hours later, empty-handed, said, I was here for 2 weeks. I couldn't find a single guy. And at the last minute, some guy walks up and says, you ever looking for people? And he had been there for 2 weeks. And, of course, he says, yeah, I really don't know. I really don't know. But he knew. And he put me in contact with the producer and with the director of the show, who gave me an audition. And I was at $2,000-$3,000 I was in. Yeah. But anyway, so I ended up getting hired for Triple Espresso, which, of course, that little pebble on my path led to so many things.
For example?
Well, Bill introduced me to Christianity. Was this really, I lived in Los Angeles at the time, so that was kind of voodoo to me. Having somebody that was answering your questions, you go, wow, that makes a whole lot of sense. I became a Christian there. And then I started touring with the show, and we ended up in Des Moines, Iowa. The show was only supposed to be there for 6 weeks, but it was so popular, it kept getting extended. It ran for 19 months. They ended up hiring a local stage manager because the traveling stage manager wanted to go home. And the person they hired is now my wife. And that was just one of those, yes. Right. And now the two kids with the turkey and pomegranate sandwiches.
Now, Patrick, you can do magic. Do you think you could do any magic here on the radio?
I could... Yeah, what kind of magic would you like me to do?
An illusion of some kind?
I can do, normally people see small, close-up, intimate magic, but, we have a bigger audience here.
Yeah,
maybe we could do, how about a levitation?
A levitation?
Oh. I would need.
Who would do the, you do it?
Well, I need somebody who has signed, not only a non-compete clause, but just in case it fails, I do not want to be sued.
Okay.
So, Michael Cohen is not my lawyer, by the way.
All right. So you are going
to... can I do it to you?
You are going
to
levitate me. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll do the magic gesture. Okay. For those of you at home, play along.
All right.
But for the audience here, they're going to see something...
spectacular.
Spectacular.
Right.
Amazing.
Right.
And I imagine at some point in time there will probably be a spontaneous burst of applause.
Because you're going to levitate me.
I'm going to levitate you.
Awesome.
And maybe even a standing ovation.
Okay.
So it's you do the magic gesture, the...
Whoa, put me down.
This is unbelievable. Look at you're going to hit the ceiling. Hey.
Whoa.
Before I bring you down, could you just change that bulb up there?
Put me down. Oh, there, finally. Oh, that was nerve-wracking. I'm out of breath.
I sure wish the people at home could see what they saw here.
Unbelievable. Thank you, Patrick, so much. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, George P. Fraser will be with us. You're listening to the live version of the Early Morning Late Show. We'll be back in a minute. All right, we are back. We're back with the live version of the Early Morning Late Show. My next guest, fresh from the makeup wagon. They didn't do a very good job, George.
No, they didn't.
George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how are you?
I'm good.
Thank you.
They love you.
They don't know me. So. Hey, congratulations on 1 year.
Yeah, I called George and I said, would you like to be part of the live show? And he said, you mean your last show?
Thanks. You had a good run.
I had a good run.
You
Thanks
did.
For the vote
no,
of confidence.
But congratulations. You've done a great job.
Yeah. George, I met George at the Salvation Army when he was the program director, and I was volunteering, and we just became friends. And one day I said, George, these stories of recovery are some of the most amazing, powerful stories I've ever heard. And you talk about in Philippians 3:10, it says that I may know him in the power of his resurrection. And I think, where do you get to witness the power of his resurrection? You certainly do in completely redeemed lives where you see dead men become alive. And I was seeing those stories all the time at the Salvation Army. And you are 33 years sober.
Right. Yeah, it's a gift. And it all comes from God. I think what we get to see every week is we get to see dead people resurrected and made alive again by the living God that we don't always see, but we can see his work. And there's nothing cooler than that. And for people that struggle with addiction, the great reward of that is God allowed that, and then he's going to rescue you. He's going to lift you up, and he has work for you. And working for the creator of the universe, there's nothing better than that. And we get to do that every week.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. Well, you started recovery, George. You didn't have success right away, did you?
Well, I thought I did. You know, I got out of jail. That was success, but I didn't want to laugh. Nice audience, Chef, here. I didn't want to quit using, and people will talk about that their lives are changed, but I love drinking, and I love doing coke, and I love gambling. And one day, those desires change, and the reason most people don't get sober is it's not a behavior change, it's a heart change. And we need God to change our heart. We can't do it ourselves, and we don't want to. And then one day you do. That is the first miracle. Mm-hmm. So I feel very lucky in my life that God allowed me to get the gift of sobriety, get the gift of desperation, be willing to do whatever it took, because this is what I was created to do.
Mm-hmm. And then after 33 years of sobriety, or 32, you had another little discovery that came after several mornings of coughing up blood, and you go, what is this all about?
Yeah, I'm a quick study. You know, and after a few mornings, but what it started out was just when I would brush my teeth, there'd be a little red line in there. And then you went with me. Somebody said earlier that if you have Bill as a friend, you don't have a better friend. And Bill drove me to the doctor, and gosh, one thing after another, I wind up stage 4 lung cancer. And thank you. That's better than when you laughed when I was in jail. But, you know, the thing is, it's awful, and you're going to die. And one of the worst parts is people are going to go on around you. Their life is going to go on, and you're not a part of it anymore. And that was absolutely crushing to me. And, Bill, you were there the whole time, but, you know, it kind of worked out.
It more than worked out. I remember your oncologist, when he was giving you the results of your test, said, George, I understand you're a man of prayer, because that would be the only way we could explain this. I mean, at stage 4, you're thinking it's over.
Well, I Googled it. You don't want to do that. And so it said I had a 5% chance to live 5 years. So I go, okay, I'm cool, because, you know, I'm in the top 5%, right? Not true. But what happened is God spoke to me, and I know people say that all the time, and I always think that's kind of psychotic. But I got a thought in my head that was actually intelligent, so I knew it wasn't mine. And what it said was, George, when you were 27 years old after three failed treatments, if you knew you would get sober for 32 years and get to work with people and then get lung cancer when you're 60, you would have said hallelujah. And that changed everything. And I knew I was going to go home, see my dad again, my mom, my dogs. Last time I said that, I put the dogs ahead of my mom, so I wanted to correct that. But it was like I was going on a long trip. But what it reinforced for me is Christ is real. What we believe is true, but there's a lot of people out there that will have a Christless eternity. And for me, we got to do something about that, because you are going to die. You know, we talk about it, but when it's actually on the calendar, it's awful. And now I'm going to be okay for a while. I got married this year to Amy, who listened to our show, was on our show, and it's been a real miracle. But what I want to tell everybody here today, I hope you're a supporter of KTIS and Faith Radio, because we got to get the word out. There's a lot of people we know every day in our life that are dying without Christ. And that's why we're here. This radio station, I'm talking to my attorney.
No, I didn't think you'd be this good.
Oh. I could take that a couple ways. But when I got sober, when I met the Lord, I went to a college down the street called Bethel, and a friend of mine who I played hockey with said, listen to Chuck Swindoll. Well, this guy's like my buddy. Every day, 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock at night, and there was Bill Pierce at night. This radio station is very important to me. Neil, Dick, Susie, Bill. Yeah. It impacts
me. Me in there.
Well, you were last, you know. But you drive around all day, and I think everybody who's here, especially you guys, you drove 4 hours to get here. That's really impressive. You listen to the radio station, and you check in every day when you're in the car. It's a big deal. So I haven't set in my faith contribution yet. I'm going to wait
till
they
do that.
Well, I wanted them to post our shows. Post our shows. You know, they're not up. But it's very important, and the gift that we have from Christ, we need to give it away. So,
George, what about the addictions that people have today? It could be food, it could be sex, it could be their smartphone. I mean, what can you give? What little piece of advice can you give people today before I send you out the door?
Well, I think all Christians are in recovery. If your life hasn't changed since you became a Christian, you need to look at that. But they're all false idols. We have food, we have, you know, drugs, drinking, to replace God in some way, and they're going to let you down. But pray to God to change your heart, because you're going to do what you want to do, not what you need to do, and not what you have to do, not what you should do. We do what we want to do. Paul talks about this in Romans 7. Change my heart, give me the desires that you want me to have. And what happens is, if you do that and you pray for it, you're going to get it. I pray every day before I get out of bed, give me the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today, because I don't want to do it. Also, cure me of my cancer if you could. But do that and get on your knees, because we have a God who wants to talk to us, who wants to help us, who's very aware of the situation, and it can change. With God's help, miracles happen all the time.
And I would say I probably took George to 16, 17 appointments in the course of about 6 weeks, and yep, there wasn't an appointment we didn't go to where he didn't take every opportunity he could to tell people about Jesus, whether it was the person coming in to remove the trash or the nurse or the doctor. It didn't matter who came in. George was always took every opportunity to share the hope that he had in Christ. And this is when we had no idea what was going to happen, but you were making every opportunity to share your faith. And I was so proud of him, and I was just trusting that God would heal him. And it really, he's now disease free after stage four.
Yeah, physically.
Physically. Yeah.
I still have all the mental stuff, but
mental stuff, we got a long ways to go still, but it's beautiful. And a lot of people don't end up with your results.
Thank
they don't
you.
End up your story, and it's powerful. So thank you for sharing it. Thank you for coming onto the show. Just love you to death.
I love you. Thanks,
yeah,
Billy.
George P. Fraser, ladies and gentlemen. All right. No, that was great, George.
Well, I thought about taking the.
No, yeah, take it off, and then, yeah. And now let's have a nice round of applause for Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're going to chat for just a few minutes before a break, but you hear him on Thursdays. Do you recognize the name and all that? You're regular listeners? I would hope so. This is Peter, and Peter, say hi.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see you all this morning. This is great,
yeah,
Bill.
Peter's
really
often
great.
In the hot seat because he teaches human sexuality classes, and you can imagine what that would be like at 8 o'clock in the morning. His classes are always packed to the gills with students looking for answers. What is that like, Peter?
Oh, it's actually been phenomenal. I didn't sign up to teach this kind of subject. It wasn't my idea coming into academia that I'd be the guy that would talk about sex, but it really is a full class every Thursday and Tuesday mornings where they come in, and it's a delightful space for about an hour and 40 minutes. We get to talk about all of their questions and their concerns. And I think the thing that I find more often than not is how quickly things change in our culture relative to the questions. And that's what I found over about 8 years of mm-hmm. teaching this class, is that the questions of 8 years ago are very different than the questions of today. So we're always asking the question, why and what's happening and how are they experiencing their life in these ways. It's a fascinating class to be a part of.
I remember when my dad gathered us, all us kids together, to give the big sex talk, which was a surprise to all of us because we thought he knew. But it must be different nowadays, Peter, because parents have higher, there's more pressure on parents because there's kids, they're active, they're exposed to things at a much younger age.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, now if a kid has a smartphone, who knows what's going to come up on that screen?
Well, that's just it. And, you know, we've got five kids at home, and it's funny because I feel like I can sort of navigate the classroom, but then I go home and I don't entirely know what to tell my own kids about this stuff so often, and the things that they're exposed to and what they're living in and the understandable questions. And to your point, Bill, I think those of us that are parents, we are ourselves confused, right, by so many of these questions. And that's what I run into as much as I run into the changes with the students, is that parents come up. And the question is always, so how do I, and then fill in the blank, right? It's how do I talk to my kids about same gender attraction? How do I talk to my kids if their friend has come out and said they're now a girl instead of a boy? How do I talk to my kids about maybe pornographic addiction? And it's always these questions of how do we live this out? And there's not a lot of answers. More often than not, there's a lot of confusion about all these topics for all of us.
Mm-hmm. And Peter, you homeschool all five kids.
My wife homeschools all five. If I did it, they wouldn't even learn how to read. So, yeah, it's much better.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to take a quick break. It's just 1:30 the hour right now. So we're going to take a little break for news. So we're going to continue on in this room with this party, but we'll take a break for news. And when we come back, more with Peter Kapsner, and then my friend Jeff Verdorn is going to be with us. And you're listening to the live version of the Early Morning Late Show. So glad you're with us. How about a nice round of applause from the studio audience? Thank you so much. Be back in a minute.
If you turn the volume up, you might be able to use the carpool lane. See, it pays to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Of course, that's Billy Preston. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing, and that's Peter's.
Oh, after that magic display? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the magic display during break, Bill. I feel like I've got nothing. There's no part of my brain I've ever accessed that way.
I'm with you on that. Peter, we have talked many times in the past about what is in the minds of the college kids today.
Yeah.
And I've been actually kind of shocked by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they come to you with incredible brokenness, incredible insecurity, and incredible fear. And this is at a Christian college.
Right.
So talk
right.
about that, if you would, a little bit.
Yeah, I think the thing that has been most interesting and also troubling in a lot of ways is how often the young people really report that they feel very lonely and really isolated in their lives. And that was so surprising to me because they're so connected, right, on their phones, and they're always snapping photos and sending out Instagram things and parallelogram or whatever all these these social media things are. They look, for all intents and purposes, like they're totally connected. And yet you ask them the question and they say, I don't really feel like I have any real friends. I don't feel connected to other people. I feel like I'm sort of living this out on my own, really anxious about whether people like me. And I think, Bill, as we've talked about it, too, over this past year, and congratulations on the year,
Thank you very much.
They sense that they're sort of living in this constant approval disapproval that social media is, right? You put something out there and everybody feels the freedom to just comment or put a thumbs up on it or make some suggestions or whatever. So that approval, disapproval stuff that I've lived in my life, they feel like they're living in it times 10 or 100 or 1,000 sometimes. It's their whole day most often.
And sometimes when you go home from school, you would have a little bit of a break from it, but not anymore.
Right.
Because the minute you get home and you check Facebook and you find out that 8 more people have given you a thumbs down, how do you deal with that pressure?
Well, and it's as addictive, and I so appreciated the last segment with George. The phone is as addictive as anything else, as drugs and alcohol might be, and that's what we find. I mean, it's actually changing our brain patterns. You can chart the physiological changes in somebody's brain when they've been on the phone and when they've been on social media. It begins to rewire how we actually experience the world. And those quick little hits of hormones or endorphins that you get just from a text or from being on Facebook, it kind of reinforces itself. So to your point, you get home from school where there could be a break from all of it, right? But you're right back on it, and it's all throughout the day.
I went to college at the University of Minnesota back in the 70s when tuition my last quarter was $297.
Wow.
So there was no real hurry to get out. So my class ring said 1980, and the last number was on a wheel. You just kind of spun to the year you got out. But if you were in college, wouldn't it be fun to have a cool professor like Dr. Peter Kapsner?
Oh, yeah, that's certainly how I experience myself. I'm so relevant, Bill. I can't even believe it. Yeah.
But, Peter, you're such a joy. On Thursdays, I love having you on the show. I always look forward to it. He always comes into the studio.
That's so fun.
Because it has to work. But thank you for coming into the studio.
Well, and you know, Bill, I never have listened harder in my life than my first 30 seconds with you, because I step into that studio and I don't have any idea where you're going. And so I have to look at you and try to figure out where we're headed for the next 16 minutes. And it's been absolutely delightful.
You're making the show sound like it's unscripted and unrehearsed.
I would never suggest such a thing, Bill. So. Hey, congrats again.
Don't make me look stupid, Peter.
And not at all. You know, Bill, and I appreciated some of the early comments. For a lot of us, this is life and death stuff. And I find when I listen, just when I'm not even on the air, I get ministered to in deep and profound ways. So I'm incredibly grateful for the work you've done.
That's awesome. Let's give Peter a nice round of applause. You know, as iron sharpens iron, so one man another. We all need people on our team that we sort of bump up against and we learn from, and they teach us and guide us and give us inspiration. This is my man right here, Mr. Jeff Verdorn. Let's give Jeff a nice round of applause. Jeff is a teacher. He teaches Sunday school, has been at Grace Church in Eden Prairie for years and years and years, and also teaches at Southwest Christian School. And that's in Chaska?
Chaska.
Chaska. So, Jeff, welcome to the show. It is tax day, and you said, I've got an idea for us. Let's talk about what the Bible teaches about paying taxes and limited government. I said, bring it on.
It is tax day. What do you say? Do you say happy tax day? Or
I don't know what you say.
Merry tax day.
What do you say?
Tax day.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they actually gave us an extra day this year, so it's the
yes.
one extra day, I think it was. April 15th is typically the day they gave us. They made some changes in the tax code, so those changes, you know, one extra day to prepare your taxes is what they gave us. So it is tax day. I decided to take a look at 1 Samuel 8 and Nehemiah chapter 5 this morning.
Let's do it.
Okay, so in 1 Samuel 8, if you know the story, Israel is asking for a king. God just told Israel, I'm your king. I will lead you. I will fight your battles for you. I will go out before you. And what does Israel do? They come to Samuel and say, we want a king. We want to be like the other nations, a king that will lead us and fight our battles for us and go out before us. And if you can imagine God's heart at that time, it would have been broken. I mean, Israel has had a tendency over their history to go after false gods and to forget the Lord their God, right, as their king. So they come to Samuel and they basically say, give us a king. And Samuel warns them. And there's a few places that I kind of wanted to point out. He says, watch out. Because he goes and inquires to God, and God says, sure, give them a king. But be careful, because he's going to take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and his horses. And he's going to say, he's going to take your daughters to be perfumes and cooks and bakers. He's going to take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his attendants. And he will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage, and he will give to his officials and his attendants. And he will take a tenth of your flocks and your and all the rest that your hand produces. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay, go ahead.
100 years ago in this country, What do you think our government took from the people in terms of as a percentage of GDP? So our GDP is like our – it's our gross domestic products. It's everything that we produce. It's like our national paycheck, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think local governments, state governments, and federal governments took of our collective GDP about 100 years ago at the turn of the last century?
I'll answer this in the form of a question like on Jeopardy. What is 3%?
Pretty close.
Well,
it's about 6%.
Okay.
6 to 7% of our – so that was less than a tenth that God warned Israel about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 100 years in this country, all forms of government cost us as the people around 6 to 7%. Second question, what do you think it is today?
36%.
About 45%.
Whoa.
So you think about that. God warned Israel of a king who would take a tenth of everything that your field produces, and we are now living in a state where the government is taking 45% of everything that we take. And I look at that, and I think of a king sitting up on a hill, letting the peasants farm their land and letting them keep half of what his fields produce. And we're almost there. We're almost giving half of everything we produce, half of our flocks, half of our crops, half of everything our hand produces to our government.
But we're getting such great value.
Well, there are some things, of course, that government has to do, that we want our government to do. We want our government, for example, in our Constitution, it says that we want our government to provide for the common defense. So we want a strong military that can protect us from, you know, threats from around the world. We want our governments to do roads and post office and, you know, so on. So there's lots of things that government should be doing. But I would argue there's many, many, many things that the government is doing that not only shouldn't we be doing from a government perspective, I don't think they have a constitutional mandate to do many of the things, like investing in solar companies and, you know, putting equity into companies like car companies and things like that. So
that's 45% versus 6%. How do we feel about that? It's kind of nauseating, actually.
Well, on tax day, you know, there's a lot of people who put out the tax freedom day about how long you have to work in order to free yourself kind of from the government burden. You know, and you think about all the different taxes that we have. We have income taxes. We have taxes on investment. We have dividend taxes. We have estate taxes. I mean, the estate tax itself, if you think about it, what if you told you a story of a farmer who grew his farm and bought more property and bought tractors and, you know, had four kids that worked the land and built up this property over decades. And he dies one day and a bunch of thugs show up and take half of everything that he has, half his tractors, half his flocks, half his sheep, half his cows, half his barns, half his whatever. We'd say that's terrible, but that's exactly what happens in this country with the inheritance tax. We have sales tax, excise taxes, property taxes. I mean, there's a long, long list of how we're taxed today. So.
Yeah, you get my like your cell phone bill, and it's like there's the one.
But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of
song
truth
belongs to my friend Jeff Verdorn, who's in studio with me this morning on the live broadcast of the Early Morning Late Show. We've got a great studio audience here, and I threw out the possibility someone might have a question for you, Jeff. So I think there's a gentleman in the back. You have a question.
I do have a question. So this goes back to tithing. So do you believe tithe is, I know it's Old Testament, but what's your thoughts on New Testament as far as tithe to the church?
Yeah, so I think the standard in the New Testament, actually Paul spells out, it's in 2 Corinthians 9. He says that when we give, not to give out of obligation, but cheerfully as one determines in the heart, because God loves a cheerful giver. I think that's just the opposite of the obligation of the tithe. The tithe was part of the law of Moses. That was a requirement for Israel to give a tenth of everything to God, to the temple. Now remember, what was specifically the tithe for in the Old Testament? The Levitical priesthood did not get an inheritance of the land like all the other tribes. So all the other tribes were to take a tenth of what they were able to produce and give it to support the Levitical priesthood, the Levites who ran the temple. So that was the purpose of the tithe. And I don't think in the New Testament we are under the tithe. Just like, by the way, under the New Testament, I don't think we're under the law of the Sabbath either. Paul says many times, I'm no longer under the law. Right? He says he's under grace. So I think the grace, in fact, I've heard pastors teach, he goes, when I'm done with you, you're going to wish you were still under the Old Testament rules, because under the New Testament, we don't just give God one day a week. We want to give him every day of the week, and we don't want to give him just 10%. We want to give him all that we have. But yeah, I don't think the tithe is for the New Testament church. I think you are to give without obligation, cheerfully, as one determines in their heart.
Great question. And Zacchaeus, he wanted to give over 50% after he had repaid everybody. So what is it, gross or net? What do we pay on?
Well, it's what you determine in your heart. Okay. So whatever you want to give, whatever you want to give, I think God honors the cheerful giver. So if that's you know, a small amount, a large amount. Now, if you're not giving that much for the purposes of God, I'm not going to have a conversation with you about tithing. I'm going to have a conversation with you about your faith and where your faith is at, and if you're trusting God with all that you have.
Great. Any other questions for Jeff? Because if not, we'll move on. Is there another question? There's a question.
So on the topic of tithing, I was talking to a friend of mine. This is probably about a year ago. Mm-hmm. He brought up an interesting point. He said that his goal for him and his family with tithing is his philosophy is that if in the Old Testament you tithe to the temple, in the New Testament they say the body is the temple, that we should be then tithing, keeping that 10% for us, the temple, and then giving away 90%. And I thought that was fascinating. He hasn't accomplished it yet, but that's his goal. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that God loves a cheerful giver. He loves a generous heart. And I've decided, you know, we all know lots of ministries that we are engaged in, involved in, we give to, and so on. And there's also a bunch of ministries that I've met over the year that are really good ministries, but I just haven't felt led to give to them for whatever reason. And so what I've decided, because we all have a lot of opportunity to give, I've decided if you pray about it, there is no wrong answer. And I'm just going to pray about the opportunities that I have to give to either ministries, to churches, to individuals who are in need or whatever. And if I pray about it and I feel moved to do something, well, then I think that's the right answer.
Great question. Jeff, you recently saw... was there another question? Oh, yeah. Here, got one more up here, Neil. Thank you so much.
I think not very long ago you talked about that everything that we have belongs to God. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're just giving back what he's given to us.
That's
and
right.
I really like that day when you spoke about that.
Yeah. I think that was on the when we talked about abiding in Christ. Look, I mean, in the end, God says, you know, to store up your treasures in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy, where thieves cannot break in and steal, because where your treasure is, that is where your heart will be also. So there is no prohibition. Our pastor at Grace this past weekend just talked about two kind of extremes that some in the church wanted. One is called kind of, I call it worm theology, where it's God requires you to give everything you have away and you can't, you know, have any possessions whatsoever. And the other one is this prosperity gospel, where it's kind of like, well, if you give $1,000, God's going to give you 1,000 times more back or whatever. And I think the principle of the biblical principle is neither one of those two extremes. It's like, be content with what you have. Paul says in Philippians, I've learned the secret to being content in any situation. So wherever your situation is, whatever it is, find yourself in, be content with that, whatever that is. Now, don't stop. You don't have to stop doing everything you can, the best that you can, as if in doing it for the Lord, Paul writes, right? But in the end, your possessions, we know this world's going to be burned up and everything in it. So what possessions do we have that really count for diddly for all of eternity? In fact, there's the old joke, the guy who's about to die, and he says, you can take one thing to heaven with you. Right. And so he gets his crate and he packs it all up and he gets there and the day comes and he dies and he goes to heaven. And St. Peter's at the gate. Now, that's not in the Bible, by the way. That St. Peter doesn't hang out at the gate checking in. It just says, well, welcome to heaven. I see you brought your case. What's the one thing you brought? And he opens it up. He takes the chain off and unlocks it and it opens it up and it's full of gold. St. Peter says, you could bring one thing to heaven and you brought pavement.
I normally do the jokes, Jeff.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you so
much.
1 year. Thank you.
And a great show. I love being here.
Oh, yeah. I love having you on the show. And I love that that we're talking a little bit about the generous spirit in the heart right after our spring share, because we had such an outpouring of generosity from all of our listeners. So, again, I'm not done gushing. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who gave and did so generously. Jeff, when it comes to opportunities you're always looking for, places to invest where it feels right. And you recently made an investment of sorts that maybe you could share with our listening audience and our studio audience.
How many of you have seen the movie I Can Only Imagine?
A bunch of hands went up.
Good number. I Can Only Imagine, of course, by Mercy Me is the number one Christian song of all time. And a couple guys from Alabama who make films, John and Andy Irwin, made the movie of Bart Millard's story, his life story, and produced this movie, I Can Only Imagine. And it's been out in the theaters now just over 4 weeks, I believe. And just yesterday or the day before, it passed $75 million in the box office, being a super movie and a great Christian movie. It's fun to see all the articles and all the papers in USA Today and whatever about what is this Christian entertainment stuff, you know, and this genre, this niche of Christian entertainment. And I think, you know, it's hard to find great movies. We were watching a movie the other night at home, and it was an Academy Award nominated movie or whatever, and thought, well, let's watch that. It was the, I can't remember the name, Bridges Over Madison, Missouri, or Billboards in Missouri or something like that. There was about 25, you know, F-bombs in the first 5 minutes, and we just flipped it off. Mm. And here's a story of the power of God to redeem, the power of forgiveness. I was at the Mercy Me concert, actually, this Friday night, and Bart said up on stage, if Bart doesn't forgive his father, there is no story. Right? And you think about the life-changing power. Bart forgives his father. His father becomes a born-again believer. And his quote is basically, I saw a man move from being a monster to being the man I wanted to become. Wow. That's the power of God to change lives.
Wow. Jeff, with just a minute left with here, so maybe you could talk and encourage how to be encouraged to abide in Christ.
Yeah, so
I know that's not fair, just giving you a minute.
No, it's one of my favorite things. I think that, you know, this is from John 15, where God says, I am the vine, you are the branches. A branch can do nothing on his own. So if you want to bear fruit, I heard a sermon one time and says, you know, we hear that phrase, don't just sit there, do something. Well, God actually says, don't just do something, sit there. And that sit there is the abide in me, right? So God says, abide in the vine, and you will produce fruit. I think we tend to get busy trying to produce that plastic fruit, mm-hmm. right? And when if we just abide in him, he will be the one that produces that fruit. And I think he says that a lot of different ways, like trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and soul and strength and mind. Abide in me. Trust in me. What is the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're under the law anymore. We're under the law of Christ, which is that first law, love God. Can you do that one thing? Can we try to do that one thing today? And that is to trust in him a little bit more.
I think when it says love the Lord your God with all your heart, I think the word heart in the Greek is the word kardia, which means love the Lord your God with the decisions you make. Mm-hmm. So we do have a choice when we can make choices that honors and shows our love and devotion for Christ.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Your suke, that soul, that's your heart, your soul, your decision-making, your mind, your will, your emotions. And when God says love him with all of your mind, that's the battleground. It's in our mind. Mm-hmm. And he says, do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Where are you going to set your heart's affections today? Where are you going to set your minds today?
Yeah. Well, that looks like it's wrapping up our first ever live broadcast of the Early Morning Late Show on the one-year anniversary when I took the job, so to speak. And I'm just thinking if we would have taken out three rows, this would be standing room only in here. So I just feel like it could have been so much more. You know what I mean? But that's just me talking. So thanks so much for being here. God bless you. Have a great day. And thanks for coming from South Dakota.
Thanks, man.
49 past the hour. You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth, and it's a joy to be talking to Paul Anthony, who is founder of Shower Up Ministry out of Nashville, Tennessee. Great to have Paul on the line. And, Paul, I do think for the record we need to set it straight that radio work is really, really hard work, and unless we've offended any other radio hosts across the country by you implying that this is really not much of a job, I think you owe us an apology.
I'm sorry. Listen, all the radio guys I know, yes, you're right. I do need to apologize because I've just spilled our dirty little secret.
Yes, there you go. Well, Paul, it is great to have you on the line. Do appreciate you so much and what God is doing in and through you and your wife and family. And it is really amazing. We did have an interesting question come up, was actually brought to our attention. And I assume there's an answer to this, that if I take a shower, do I put my dirty clothes back on? And that's a legit question.
That's a great question. And that's probably the question that we get asked most often. So one of the things that we try to do is we try to partner with other organizations. So when we go out, we're not alone in serving. We're also there with folks who are providing usually a meal and clothing. So we work with folks who do clothing ministry. We specialize, and this is kind of a funny thing to specialize in, but we specialize in socks and underwear. So that's an area that we want to make sure that everyone has at least those items that are clean and fresh and available to them. Sometimes they want to have new clothes. It's not guaranteed that they're putting back on dirty clothes. It's not guaranteed that they have dirty clothes. There are laundromats that oftentimes that they can use. There are laundry facilities that they have access to. Sometimes, during the summer, they may just chuck what they have and put on new things that they're able to get from these other partner ministries. So we are aware of trying to make sure that when people do get a shower, they're getting fresh clothing. And so, yeah, that's a great question.
Well, thank you for the answer. That's a great answer. You've been doing this for a little over a year, or right about a year, and you're about to provide your 1,000th shower. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been amazing, and God has been blessing this ministry and the work that we do. A year ago, I never would have imagined we would have been here, but here we are. Yeah, just about to give our 1,000th shower. It'll happen this month.
And you have a second vehicle around the corner, correct?
We are currently fundraising for a second vehicle to not only provide more showers in the locations that we're currently at, but also to expand into other locations around the city. There's a great need here, and so we're trying to satisfy that need. We've been in talks with other folks, too, about providing Shower Up in other communities and other cities around the country. So there's a lot of cool things happening, and we're very excited about it.
Well, you know, one of the I get your newsletter, and I saw a video. I think she was in elementary school, maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, of a young girl who was collecting coats for the homeless. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, you know what? She was just such a special girl. She saw that there was a need. And, of course, you know, we don't get winters here like folks in the upper Midwest get winters. But when you're living in Nashville, 40 degrees feels cold. And we don't have a lot of winter coats just stockpiled, especially for the homeless. There's a real sense that when you're trying to travel light, if you've got a heavy coat, okay, you're going to need that. But you get rid of it when spring hits. So every year there's a real need to have winter coats. And she saw a need, and she just said to her classmates, her friends, her neighbors, her family, hey, we need some coats. Could you help out? And literally, I mean, just dozens and dozens of coats this young girl brought. It was so cool for us to see that because, you know, when we talk about generosity and those kinds of things being born in the hearts of children and young people, that is so encouraging. And that just to me is that's the Spirit of God living in someone's life.
Well, you could see the video in her face was just alive. I mean, she was just so excited to be a part of this ministry and to know that that she was doing good for many. And really, God was using her in a very significant way. Paul, talk to us really about, you know, what circumstances lead to homelessness. You probably have some idea now that you've been working in this area for a few years now. What are some of the common steps that lead to homelessness?
Well, there are some things that, you know, when you think about homeless people, there are things that you get right when you put together a stereotype. But there are some things that we just don't even realize. A lot of homeless folks that we encounter have military background. They have served our country.
That's very tragic, too, by the way. That's extremely tragic.
Yeah, it's horrible. And they come out of that sometimes unable to fully avail themselves of some of the resources that are available to them because they're just not in a healthy place mentally and emotionally. So they wind up on the street. They burn bridges. For some guys, we've seen this numerous times. These are guys who they have found themselves through one or two different life circumstances. It could be a health issue. It could be a broken relationship. It could be a family issue. It could be a loss of a job. And they wind up being homeless really just through bad circumstances. Mm-hmm. And then they get embarrassed. They get ashamed. They burn bridges with family and friends. And they wind up with no other options. Their bodies are getting older. They can't go out and do some of the hard labor that they've known their whole lives. And they run out of opportunity. We have other folks who, like Albert we met last night, just fresh out of incarceration, trying to get a new start in life, and they've already hit rock bottom. They're working their way back up. And then folks who are suffering from all kinds of different illnesses, whether they be emotional, mental, physical illnesses. Nashville, unfortunately, is the worst city in the country for chronic homelessness. These are long-term folks. 2 out of 5 of our homeless are chronically homeless long-term because of different circumstances, but often because of different health issues.
Paul, if people would like to donate to Shower Up or learn more about your ministry, how do they do that?
Great question. Thank you for asking it. We are at showerup.org. We are a nonprofit charitable organization. We're faith-based. We believe that Matthew 25 lives through what we do in serving the least of these. And so that's how you can find us. We're also on social media, Instagram, Facebook. Just look for Shower Up and you'll find us.
All right. Paul Anthony, founder of Shower Up in Nashville. Great to have you on the air, my friend. Always great to talk to you. We'll be back with some closing comments on the Early Morning Late Show. Thank you for allowing me to fill in for the last couple of hours for Bill Arnold, the Early Morning Late Show. Bill will be back on Friday. Looking forward to that. Today marks the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s last speech. I've been to the mountaintop. It was to a group of striking sanitation workers. Tomorrow will be the 50th anniversary of his assassination, and I know we're going to be talking more about that as a part of the Early Morning Late Show. I know Neil Stavem will be featuring some interviews and conversation related to that. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for praying for this ministry. Thank you for tuning into the Early Morning Late Show as you do so well. If you'd like to join us live 2 weeks from today, check it out on our website, myfaithradio.com. You can register online and join us for an hour of great fun and entertainment.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.